Welcome once again to our program on the universal call to holiness that was given us by the Second Vatican Council and repeated so often in his wonderful homilies and talks across the world, John Paul II the Great, the Pope who was on pilgrimage to the near and far away outposts of humanity. We're talking about how to be holy. And Jesus gave us the blueprint in the eight Beatitudes. The eight Beatitudes are ways that Jesus said, and they seem to be contradictory, but that's why it's called a paradox, of being happy, even in this life, maybe only in the next, if we were persecuted for justice's sake. But it's ways of experiencing what Jesus said, I've come that you might have life. And have it to the full. We're not supposed to be, there's a book written, saints are not sad. If a saint is sad, then they're missing the joy of the fruits of the Spirit. My guest again is Ron Eldren, professor of world history and religion at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus at St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar, where the big shamrock is at the crossroads. Ron, welcome back to the program. I believe we're up to the fifth Beatitude. We've come halfway through the eight Beatitudes. The fifth Beatitude is, happy are the merciful. They shall have mercy shown to them. What does that mean?
Mercy is not a very popular word outside of Christianity. Father Hardin defines mercy as, quote, love that overcomes resistance. Love that overcomes resistance, end of quote. For example, what he means is we love in spite of the fact that we are not loved. We love those things that cause us difficulty and trouble. In fact, we love even those who not only don't love us, but who may oppose us, who may even hate us and cause us harm. Father says that this is the type of mercy that God has towards us. It is his love overcoming resistance, that is our resistance. It is we who offer resistance to God's love, yet in spite of this, God still loves us. And Father Hardin says that this is mercy.
Okay, and this is really a tough one, I think, because it says that we will not return evil for evil. We will be forgiving of those who injure us. And aren't we going to talk a little while down the line that the Our Father reflects the spirit of the eight Beatitudes, and for instance, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us?
Well, that's one of the reasons that the Our Father was a part of the Sermon on the Mount.
Okay, so it's sort of a echo.
Yes.
All right. Well, I hate to go over that very fast, because it may be one of the hardest things that Jesus asked us to do, to be merciful to people that aren't merciful to us. Be loving to those who we don't like. Be loving to those who, as you mentioned, do not love us. And as Father Hardin said, it's not a very popular word outside of Christianity.
Well, you remember one of Jesus' greatest miracles had to do with the forgiving debts.
Parables?
Yes, one of his parables.
Okay.
The one man was forgiven a great debt, you know, by the master, and he went begging to the master and what have you, and then he in turn goes out and doesn't show mercy towards someone who owes him some money, a much smaller amount of money.
So didn't Jesus even say, if you do not forgive others, you will not be forgiven by God? That's a pretty scary statement.
Well, you can see that in the, you know, the Lord's Prayer.
Okay. Forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who trespass against us, yes.
That's a very dangerous statement for all of us to make. Okay, well, why don't we go to the sixth Beatitude? Happy are the blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God.
Well, Father Hardin tells us there are many meanings to the expression pure of heart or purity of heart. But the one that we cannot omit is the internal chastity of the mind. The internal chastity of the mind, symbolized by the biblical word heart. Father says that whenever the scriptures want to interiorize a virtue, they speak of having it in one's heart. I always kind of wondered, you know, when you when they talked about the heart, and I know the heart's the center of our being in a sense, in a physical sense at least, but I always kind of wondered what, when we say that we hold something in our heart, exactly what that means. And Father Hardin is telling us here that the scriptures are telling us it means to interiorize a virtue. Okay. That is, make it a part of us.
It's coming not just from I'm being forced to act on the outside,
right,
but really comes from deep within my personality. Okay, what then is meant by internal chastity or purity, which may be one of the really difficult virtues that we have to fight for today?
Father explains that we usually think of chastity in the external sense, because quite obviously it deals with the senses and the control of the sexual pleasures that are natural to us. However, purity of heart is internal chastity of the mind, and what he calls chastity of the imagination. This is more than chastity of body or chastity of the senses, then. It means that a kind of custody over the internal movements of our spirit, in which we sacrifice the very laudable and beautiful and sacred satisfaction which God permits only to those who are married and only within the marital embrace. Furthermore, he says that purity of heart is required of all Christian followers. It is not only priests or religious who vow to celibacy who are called to practice chastity of heart, that married people outside of their own marital relations also are called to practice purity of heart. He acknowledges that this is very difficult, especially in a society saturated with sex. Nevertheless, those who desire to seek God in this life and in the next must practice purity of heart. Father says that chastity confers clarity of vision, which enables a person to see God in a way that those who do not practice chastity cannot. He tells us that God's beauty and goodness, even in the most impossible situations of life, is reserved for those who have learned the secret of purity of heart. And I've done quite a bit of studying of the lives of the saints, and when we study their lives, we see that purity of heart is one of their most conspicuous virtues.
And it's one of the probably the most difficult in our society, as you were mentioning there, that Father said today, to remain chaste in mind and imagination and in spirit requires an awful lot of effort on everybody's part. I heard a program recently by a guy who was addicted to pornography. And he finally worked himself out, and he founded a group called Knights of Truth to help other people get out of the quicksand of pornography. But he said, I came to the conclusion, one of the things I had to do, I had to stop watching television, just ordinary television, because there were so many suggestive thoughts and imaginations and pictures on the light.
Now, most of commercials, sitcoms, all kinds of programs are just simply saturated with it. The entendre, the double entendre, the triple entendre, the in fact, sex, sometimes very direct. It's not even an entendre a lot of times.
So, he was a guy who was deeply involved, and he said pornography is one of the most difficult things to get out of, even though he wanted to. And I've just been given a reminder that he founded what is called True Knights, KNIGHTS.org. And it's beginning to really make an impression across the country because it's becoming such a problem in Among professional people, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, school principals, it's something like falling into quicksand. It's so easy to get into it with a flick of a mouse.
Well, I tell my students, I've told them, heaven and hell is a click away.
Wow, that's a powerful statement.
Because the internet, you know, has all kinds of wonderful things. Yet at the same time, it's like lots of things. It's a double-edged sword, and it can be good, you know, evil or good.
They're going to have a men's conference for the first time in Indianapolis, put on by the Marion Center, towards, I think it's about at the end of September, beginning of October. And one of the big topics you're going to cover is how to deal with the growing plague of pornography. They got some wonderful speakers coming in who are going to help them with that. So, there was a story about Thomas Aquinas, that one of the reasons that he saw God so clearly, and his all the books that he wrote, the Summa Theologica, some of all the things that have been said about God up to the 13th century, because he had a powerful gift of chastity or purity of heart. And there are a lot of stories about that, some of whom, which you probably know.
Well, there was the one story that after his brothers had tried to tempt him, you know, with this prostitute, when he was locked up, because they didn't want him to go off and be a Dominican, they wanted him to go to be the abbot of the Benedictine monastery at Monte Cassino, they got this prostitute to go up there to tempt him while he was locked up in this castle there.
A family castle, yes.
His dad was the Duke of Aquino, and really was related to his mother and father, were both related to three or four kings and the emperor, I might add, as well. So it couldn't be a very high family, but whatever. When he saw this woman, he saw what they were doing, and so the story is he ran over to the fireplace and picked out this poker that was red hot and took it and chased the woman out of the room. That must have been a frightening thing, because he was he would be like a Green Bay Packer a lineman. He was about probably 6 foot 4 or 5 and weighed about 300-400 pounds, so he was an enormous man, and he chases her out of the room and slams the door shut, as the story goes, and he takes his hot poker and he puts, I believe it was the cross or
cross
something like that,
the door.
And the door. And supposedly the story goes, whether this is factual or whether it's legend, I think there's probably a lot of basis in fact in the story. Supposedly an angel came down and tied a censure around his waist or something like that,
symbolizing,
and extinguished his concupiscence.
Gave him the great gift of chastity.
Yes.
So, Augustine talks about so much from his other side of the story that one of the things that muddled his mind, that darkened his mind, was that he was involved in sins of the flesh, and that sins of the flesh can really pull us down. I think Our Lady of Fatima said to the three children, Francisco, Lucy, and Jacinta, that sins of the flesh are sending more people to hell than any other kind of sins. Now, people don't like to hear that, and we think that may be exaggerated, but it's one of the easiest sins to fall into.
The other day, I think it was the other day, I heard some statistics, it was in the news somewhere, somebody had done some research on people viewing pornography on the internet. And it's something like a high percentage of, I think it was over 50%. I don't remember the exact percentage of people who actually, look at pornography on the internet fairly regularly. I think it was, if I recall right, it was like 65%. I could stand corrected on that, but I do know that it was over 50%, I'm pretty sure.
Well, you know, the Old Testament says, no man, and of course meaning woman too, no man or woman can be pure or chaste unless God himself gives it. So it's a real grace of God. It's a gift from God. And the only way I know that any of us could stay chaste or pure in the world today is to pray for it. Pray for it every day. Ask for that grace, because temptations are multiple, as you said so nicely there. Heaven, heaven and hell are a flick away with the television.
Yeah, click away.
Click away.
The mouse, click away.
Okay, well, happy are the clean of heart, for they shall see God. Obviously, even in this life, we get clarity of vision. And all the great doctors of the church that you've often so quoted, Ron, John of the Cross, and Teresa of Avila, and Teresa of Lisieux, and who else are great? Well, St. Thomas Aquinas, Bonaventure.
Yes.
Certainly, they were known for a purity of heart, and that meant purity of mind and imagination. You know, there's one little advice always came to people in confession. In time of temptation, particularly sexual temptation, two simple things. Pray and get away. Pray some short prayer, Blessed Mother, help me. And then get away. Change the channel of our thinking. Get interested in something else. Maybe clean out a closet or plan what you're going to do for vacation. But getting away from temptation is a much better way than trying to fight against it.
Yeah, as the Catechism would say, get out of the near occasion of sin or the proximate occasion of sin. And don't put yourself in that. But that's the whole point of this saturation of sex in our society. It's so prevalent that you can't escape it.
So hard to get away.
Yes.
Let me tell you one quick story. They told out at the youth convention out in Denver. This guy was walking down the street, and he wasn't paying attention, and he fell into a manhole. So he climbs up, and he's all dirty and full of grime and grease and all the stuff in the manhole, pulls himself out, goes home, washes up. The next day, he's walking down the same street, and he's not paying attention again. And somebody hollers at him, and he says, "Oh, hi, Joe," and then he falls into the manhole again. So he's black and blue, and he comes up out of the manhole second time. And he goes home and he gets cleaned up. And so the next day he's walking down the street, and he's walking down the street and he decides, I'm going to take a different street. And that's what's called avoiding the occasions of sin. That was physical dirt, but this occasion of sin would be spiritual dirt. All right, let's go to happy are the peacemakers. They shall be called children of God.
Well, of this beatitude, Father Hardin says, there is so much disorder in the world that God wants peacemakers. And peacemaking means reconciliation. First with God, the highest kind of peacemaking, then with ourselves, and finally within ourselves. In fact, when we go to confession, we call that, today, reconciliation. So really what we're doing, of course, is making peace with God that somehow we've gotten estranged with. Then he asks, what is the promise of this beatitude? Father Hardin does. And he answers that this beatitude promises a special affection from God, even as a mother or father has for a child. As peacemakers, we are to labor to reconcile sinners with God as well as people we love, people we want only the best for, and who are estranged from God or who are estranged among themselves. Finally, as a kind of capstone, he says that is the most unexpected kind of happiness.
Wow, I've never heard that before. The joy that comes from being a reconciler or a peacemaker has an unusual gift of joy with it.
Yes.
Okay. Let me just quote from Pope John the 23rd's monumental encyclical on peace on earth. And it's one of my favorite quotations. In fact, I had a holy card made with it on because I thought it summarized so well. But he was talking about peacemaking on international level, peacemaking on in national level, peacemaking all across the world. But then he came down to peacemaking between individuals. And he said there can be no peace between two persons unless each person builds up within oneself the order wished by God. And in what does that order consist? And he's quoting St. Augustine. God commands the soul commands the body, and there is nothing more orderly than this. So peace depends on that getting things in order. We get our mind listening to God, and we get our body listening to our mind or our will and our free will, and then we're back again with our wheels on the track, because sin is always a disorder. So I can't be a peacemaker of the United Nations if I don't learn to have peace within myself.
Yes, I think that's really critical. That if we don't have peace within ourselves, we're not going to be able to be peaceful. Only to the extent that we have peace within ourselves are we going to be able to be peaceful with others and peaceful with God.
There's a beautiful song, "Let There Be Peace on Earth. Let it begin with me." And St. Francis, you know, beautiful prayer, "Lord, you make me, not somebody else, you make me an instrument of your peace." Okay, I think we've covered all but the eighth beatitude, the eighth way to be happy. "Happy are those who suffer persecution for justice sake. They shall, or for righteousness sake, they shall possess the kingdom of God."
This is probably the most complex of all of the Beatitudes. Perhaps that's one of the reasons Jesus left it for last. Father Hardin states that Jesus knew that he couldn't let this Beatitude stand alone, that he was going to have to explain it. And he said, quote, "Happy are you when men reproach you, persecute you, and speaking falsely, say all manner of evil against you for my sake." End of quote. Father's here quoting Matthew 5:11 from the Sermon on the Mount. In the next verse, Jesus even goes further when he says, quote, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so men persecuted the prophets who were before you." And then Father Hardin says that this beatitude is all that keeps him sane at times. And he doesn't, he was too humble to say why in this article that I was reading.
But I think you can make a guess.
Yes. In his own life, he ran into a lot of resistance because of his orthodoxy, because of his attempt to catechize, to bring devotion to the Blessed Sacrament and adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and all kinds of things. In fact, even his own order, he was a Jesuit priest, even his own order gave him some difficulties at times. But he was always very humble and obedient whenever these kind of things did happen.
Wasn't he appointed by Pope John Paul II to, especially in the United States, try to renew the fundamental belief in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist?
That's one of the reasons he came back and started up what's called the Perpetual Adoration Association.
Okay. And he was a theology professor for many years.
Oh, yes. He was a seminary professor.
Seminary professor.
Yes.
So he certainly knew his theology well.
Well, you know, Jesuits are known for their high education and what have you, and you'd have to put him up there at the very top of Jesuit theologians and philosophers and catechists.
Okay. We've talked about the eighth commandment, and one of the toughest, suffer persecution for justice sake. I think you might say something about persecution in our time. You had a good quote in there. Why that applies to our age, particularly the 20th century. So many martyrs.
Well, this has been called by some historians an age of persecution. In fact, probably more than any other age in the whole history of the world. Since 1900, there have been more martyrs to the faith than all the rest of the martyrs put together in the history of the church, in the 2,000-year history of the church.
Now, I want you to say that again, because I've heard that before, Ron, but I find that staggering, knowing the first three centuries of persecutions of the Christians, the persecutions throughout history, the persecutions under the Nazis, under the communists, under Stalin, the gulags, the concentration camps.
But even in places today, in the Sudan, for example, would be a good example of Christians being martyred for their faith. And you would find this in a number of other countries. That's one type of martyrdom, of course. This would be the red martyrdom. as you used to distinguish with the kids, the white martyrs and the red martyrs. The red martyrs being those who died for Christ, the white martyrs being those who live for Christ. But even living for Christ is a kind of martyrdom in this day and age. You've got to put up with a lot of criticism and people poking fun at you and all kinds of things of that sort if you're going to live a life in accordance with the gospel.
Well, now, but that quote you made, because I've heard several times, there are more martyrs died for the name of Christ since 1900 than in all the previous centuries of Christianity put together. Are we talking about red martyrdom?
Oh, yes, we're talking about red martyrdom there.
Okay.
And it would be into the millions.
Into the millions. Okay.
I mean, if you take the early persecutions of the Christians, let's say during the time of Diocletian or Nero, earlier one, and several others during the time of Marcus Aurelius. These were all emperors, Roman emperors, and a few others. There was some, the number of martyrs would just be in the thousands. So they were minuscule compared to the number of martyrs we find in the 20th century. And we're not just talking about the millions and millions of people that died during World War I and World War II. We're talking about Christian martyrs. We're talking about people who died for the faith.
Specifically in the name of Jesus.
Yes.
Korean martyrs, the Japanese martyrs, the English martyrs. There have been people in every country through history who have been martyred for the faith. Well, let me just bring in here, since our time is just a little running out on us. Pope Pius XII, when he canonized Mary Goretti, I believe it was in 1950, he spoke because she had been fought off Alessandro Serinelli, a 19-year-old, who wanted to rape her, and she fought him off valiantly, and I think he stabbed her something like 14 times, and she lived for about a day or so, and she, on her deathbed, she forgave Alessandro at the priest's request, and she said, oh, I want him to be with me in heaven. But Pope Pius XII then said to this great crowd out in St. Peter's when Maria was canonized, I believe 1950, he said, listen to this statement, it takes the same amount of courage to live a chaste life in the big cities of our society today as it took for Mary Goretti, as it took for the early Christians to shed their red blood on the sands of the Roman arena. That it's actually have to have the courage of the martyrs to live a chaste life today. And that was said back in 1950, before we had all the communication and pornography and that type of thing in movies that we have today. So when we talked about that beatitude, happy, blessed are the clean of heart, the pure of heart, it's something that, well, only with the grace of God that any of us day by day could maintain. And one of the things they always encourage is go to the Sacrament of Penance. Go to the Sacrament of Penance. Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI have said, go to the Sacrament of Penance at least once a month. It's the antidote to all the poison that we breathe in around us. It's the medicine of sanctity, a good, devout, humble confession. And, you know, we've always said as Catholic, look, if I'm struggling with anything, any bad habit, that shouldn't keep me from confession. It should enable me to go. If I'm struggling with pornography, go to confession. If I'm struggling with drugs, go to confession. Because that's where we get the grace to overcome the awful temptations that are part of our ordinary culture today. Well, Ron, you got any final word to say on the Beatitudes as we close up?
Well, if we had a little time, I was planning on sharing something that Father Benedict Groeschel had said and tying them into the different stages of holiness, but our time
we'll take that next time.
Okay.
All right. May God bless you always and in all ways.